incredible Apple event the first week of April. Every week, I'm going to do this until we get there. Do you think there's going to be an Apple event this month?
I don't think so. I wasn't convinced there was an Apple event in March. Like, I expected new products to come out in March, but I wasn't, like, on the, you know, event hype train, if you see what I mean.
Yeah. Did you listen to John Gruber's podcast, The Talk Show, the last episode, most recent episode? Yeah. It was pretty heavy on speculation, but it's, you know, it was speaking as if there was going to be an event this month sometime.
Yeah, Gruber's on the, there's going to be an event for sure. But
yeah,
I don't know. I think he's just like making up his own mind. I don't think he really knows left one way or the other. But
okay.
Like, I mean, there'll be a couple of topics later where we can maybe bring this up again. But if you just look at the platter of stuff that Apple could announce that is ready to go in for this time frame,
yeah,
I think you can really pull enough stuff together to make like an hour event out of it. But equally, it's just a video at the end of the day, so, you know, maybe the bar's lower. But
yeah, I'm still discovering things from the last iPhone event, which was a while ago.
Yeah, I think one of Gruber's like points is ATT, so the app tracking transparency stuff. He thinks that Apple will want to like present that formally on a stage of thing. I don't think that's going to happen. Like,
okay,
I mean, could be wrong. But my instinct is they're going to just roll that thing out, and because it's going to have so much backlash from, you know, Facebook and everyone else. Like, I don't think they really want to like stand on a stage and be like, here we go, we're going to do this and explain. Because app tracking transparency is really boring. Like, you can't just have like a one slide of like, this is the dialogue.
I've already stopped doing listening to the podcast. Yeah.
If you, outside of the audience of this podcast, an Apple event with an app tracking transparency section is really dull. Like, I think that's the reason they're doing all this, you know, PR blitz with the interviews, and they're, you know, doing Kara Swisher stuff, and they're on the news all the time. Like, that's what they're readying for app tracking transparency. I don't think they're really going to have like, they're not going to make it a part of a stage presentation, or, you know, the equivalent of, in my opinion, anyway.
Copy that. Yeah. So, so I'm still discovering things from the last iPhone event. A few weeks ago, I wrote a review, sort of my mini review of the iPhone 12 mini. And my headline was this: best for people who don't love phones but love what they can do. And this came from, let's see. So I had review units of the iPhone 12 and 12 Pro. And so I talked about my experience with those two phones. I prefer
those were the two that came out first,
right? And I preferred the 12 Pro of those two because, you know, a lot of reasons. But you know, if the phone screen is the same size and you're in the choice is this has two cameras, this has three. Well, I want the one with the zoom lens. So I like that. And then I do like the materials of the Pro phone, and I like the blue on the Pro better than the blue on the 12, which were the two review units. And I used those for a while, and then I bought, you know, just to kind of get the experience with, and then I bought a 12 Pro Max, and I was really happy with that. Used that for a little while. I used that with Verizon because I had, you know, that true incredible 5G, but you have to be on like one block of one street to experience it. Ultra wideband 5G?
Ultra wideband 5G.
Yeah. You know, and that scratched my itch in terms of, should you care? Does it make a difference? You get a really impressive screenshot with speed test, but, practically speaking, even with that, I don't know what to do with it yet. I'm not sure that iOS knows what to do with it yet either.
Didn't you say you run with like 5G disabled?
Currently or then? I mean, I kept 5G enabled when I was living with that 5G across the street from me. Now I'm not using Verizon anymore. I'm not using that phone. I ended up selling the Pro Max. And that's where the 12 mini came in. Was like, oh, what's one phone of the new four phones I haven't used yet? Let me try it and see how much I like it. And it's so much cheaper than a 12 Pro Max. I'm using that with AT&T. And I kept 5G off, the radio off, because I didn't live with 5G anymore when I moved back to Mississippi, the Gulf Coast. But I had to turn it back on because if I go over to Mobile, Alabama, in Mobile, there's areas where the LTE is very bad. And the trick before on AT&T was to turn off your LTE radio and use 3G. And then you had, like, you could load, you know, your email again. And like, if you're in the parking lot at Best Buy and you want to get your pickup email so that you can have, you know, that to get your product that you ordered in the parking lot, you really want to get that email in, but the service is bad in that parking lot. So I would turn off LTE, use 3G, it would load just fine. And then I'd remember to turn LTE back on when I left. So I hit that spot again. But, you know, on the iPhone 12 family of phones, you can't turn off LTE and go back to 3G. It's not an option. You can only, you can only toggle LTE, or you can only toggle 5G on and off, and then
which goes to LTE. They only let you drop down one level.
Yeah, you can't drop down the two levels in that situation. But fortunately, there is AT&T 5G, and not with remarkable screenshot worthy speed test. It's just like 30 down, 30 up. But there is 5G over there, where the LTE has always been very poor for me, like a dead spot with bars though. The 5G works. So it's been, if I've kept the 5G radio on just because I'm going back and forth enough that I don't want to have to keep toggling it. But yeah, I don't live with 5G every day anymore like I used to. But 5G now is only useful if I can't fall back to 3G and I need an alternative band to use.
5G for you is 4G, but you still have service. Like, that's yes. Reality.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
But the Mini, what, you liking it?
Yeah, no kidding. Like, so, and both of these phones I just bought, you know, paid outright, and ended up, you know, I sold the 12 Pro Max when I wasn't going to be using that ultra wideband 5G anymore. It's like, well, I really don't care about that if I'm not going to live within 8 hours of it. So I ended up selling the phone, you know, for most of its cost, and that was fine. And then I was like, well, do I want to get that same phone again or not? And, you know, I wrote in the story, you know, some of the reasoning behind it, but it was mostly just, you know, technology curiosity. I haven't used the Mini before and how much I like it. And so I, you know, there was one in stock, and I was thinking I wanted to get like the mint one, but or maybe the red one, but I thought, I don't regret the red one. Let me just get black, because that one's in stock today and I can take it home and buy it, you know, take it home. And I just got like the base storage, which I think is 64 gigabytes. Is that right?
Yep.
Which costs $699.
Yes.
Okay. So $699 compared to $1099, I guess, if you're looking at base storage on the 12 Pro Max. And those are the two phones I was interested in, because I had, you know, test units of the other two phones if I really wanted to. But I wanted all my own phone, of course. So I got that. And it's like, well, this is a really smart decision, like monetarily, to get this phone. And if I don't like it, then I'll just exchange it. I'll get a Max again. No problem. And I got the black one. And I'm really like it. Like, when you're comparing the phones, like if you look at a Plus phone, it looks bigger, but eventually you get used to it. And then it's just, well, what can I do with it that I can't do with the other? And a lot of times you can do a lot. Like the web's bigger, and photos are bigger, and movies are bigger, and that's not all you need. And then on the like the middle size phones, that's standard, and on the Mini, it's like, well, what can't I do that I usually can do? It's nothing that you can't do. It's just not as nice. You know, the web is a little bit more compact, and I tend to want to go to my Mac if I have an idea, you know, that I want to read something further. But for things like, you know, it's got the same camera as the 12. The form factor is really cool. Like, I've actually taken it out. I like that it's not space gray. It's actually black. I think it photographs beautifully if you're just taking like product shots of it, which we do for work. I was really happy with my lead image on the story, because it's like the iPhone 12 mini in black on top of like a couple of records, and it just looked really neat. I've been showing it off to people, like when I'm out with friends or family, and I know that they don't even have any version of a 12. And you know, I'm like, hey, have you seen this phone? Like, check it out. And like, it's like a futuristic, like I called it the phone for people who don't love phones, because my thinking was like, if you just want a good phone, but you don't care about, you know, bells and whistles, this has bells and whistles, but it's just a smaller form factor. And you can, you know, communicate with it. You can keep in touch and all that stuff. And so that's what I was happy with, was like, I feel like it's less immersive, which is bad if you want to have an immersive experience, but it's good if you want to just spend less time on your phone. But what the reaction I've gotten from, like, for example, my stepsister was, and my brother-in-law said, this is what I would get coming from the 10R, because I can reach all the corners. Like, yeah, you can. Okay. It's really cool. And my stepsister, she's got an 8 plus, or 8, what is it called? 8 plus?
The bigger 8 plus, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So she's got 8 plus. And she's like, it's not as big, but it's like a really futuristic iPhone 5 because it fills the screen, because compared to your 8 Plus, it doesn't have bezels, you know? So that was her perspective on it. And she was like, that's really neat. And I can't stop thinking about it. It's like, if we never went to bigger phones, like even like the 10, you know, or the 11, 12, et cetera, this is like what the track of the iPhone 5 would eventually have led to was this, or maybe the 6, I don't know, but I'm really happy with it. And I think the last thing I settled on was like, man, really the only thing I don't like about it is the name Mini, because it just feels like this is like the basic iPhone, you know, this is an iPhone 12. And then it's like, you know, what do they call the other ones? And you go from there. But, and maybe, you know, maybe Mini is appropriate because it's like a miniaturation of something that only existed in a larger form before, you know, a la iPad, but I've been really happy with it. And man, it's cool. And I'm not using a case with it. And, you know, I haven't used cases with other 12s or other recent phones either, but you know me that I've done some screen, not cracks, but like, like key lines and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Even with cases, it doesn't matter. It's a screen cover. I haven't had any issue like that in the last like month of using this phone. I think because it's like small and light, and you know, I don't know what it is, but it's just it's good though. And you can
hold it in your palm of your hand so it can't fall out.
Yeah,
I've cup it in your hand.
Yeah, but it's cool. Like I just literally haven't even bought a case for it in a month, and I've been happy with it, you know, fine. So I'm really,
because when you had the SE, obviously, yeah. The old SE,
the original, you know, the original SE,
we talk about this show a lot. Like, you have a lot of issues with truncation and iOS just being, you know, used to being
a lot of dot to dot to carry with scroll dot, dot, and dot, menu bar.
And iOS is just designed to be on a bigger display than that, right?
Yeah.
The big thing here is the Mini's width. It's not so the SE's width converts down to logical resolution of 320, uh-huh. But the 12 Mini renders at the same logical width as like the 11 Pro, so it's 375. So it's still rendering on a width which is like the kind of the bit where iOS is like designed around, right?
Yeah,
like
the
iPhone
phone.
11 size.
Yeah,
so nothing really feels like way out of whack. Like, obviously the screen's smaller, so like text is smaller or whatever, but in terms of what you can see laid out on the screen, it's not comparable to like the iPhone SE situation where stuff is cut off, or it's just meant to be wider and, you know, titles are too big and stuff. Like, it's basically like an iPhone 11 Pro experience just shrunk down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's you know, we'll talk about the iPad Mini in a moment, but that's what happened with the original Mini. Was let's take the 9.7 inch iPad and shrink it down to 7.9 inches, right? And it was effectively the same screen real estate, but just smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm really happy with it. And
is battery life around the Mini for you?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you know, I'm at home, you know, like quarantine life is almost like normal life for me. For
the Mini decade. Supports the quarantine lifestyle.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I'm either in the car in transit and I'm on the wire usually, or I've got a wireless charger in the car, so it's on the pad. Or I'm at home where, you know, I can put it on MagSafe, I can put it on wireless charger, I can plug it in, a lot of charging opportunities. Or if I'm out and about, you know, I might not even be using my phone that much, so it's not getting hit as much. So yeah, battery life's been fine for me for this phone. And it's, you know, the bigger thing is like, if it was an LCD screen, I wouldn't consider it, but this isn't an LCD, it's an OLED screen, and it's, I mean, it feels like the iPhone. It feels like this is. It's very much a successor to the iPhone 10, and that there's nothing that you lose if you went from an iPhone 10 to a 12 Mini, and you don't care about like the what is I forget the numbers of the screen size itself, but like what 5.8 to 5.4,
yeah, 4, so it's pretty small.
Yeah, so if you don't care about that part, everything else about it. Well, I guess there wasn't was there a zoom lens then. Yeah, but so you replace like the zoom lens from a 10 to the ultra wide lens on the 12 Mini, but you don't lose in terms of, you know, OLED, all screen design, Face ID, all those things. So it's the right phone for me right now, is what I'll say. I've been surprised, because I thought that this one would be just like, that's too far removed from me as a tech enthusiast. You know, that's too, that you give up too much to have in that compact design. That's too much of a reach back to the past, but it doesn't feel that way. It just feels like a modern iPhone 5.
You know? Yeah, like if you can get along with it, like mainstream people can get along with it, you know? Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's good to hear, actually, because people have asked me, like, what should I buy or whatever, and I've been hesitant on recommending the Mini. Like, someone I actually told to just, they were price sensitive, and I told them to get an 11 instead.
Yeah.
Just because the Mini's, like, small or not. But if, you know, if you're liking it and stuff, maybe I'll turn it, you know. I want, like, the 11 size, if you see what I mean, like, around that range, like the 11 Pro size or the 11 size, like that 6.1 display. But, you know, for a general person, I don't think there's anything wrong with the Mini.
I think if you lived with it, you're like, it's $100 difference. Do you really care enough? Like, I think
if it was the only option, you'd be fine with it, right? But because
you know how the 12-inch MacBook costs more than, you know, like a 13-inch MacBook Air, because it was like a premium miniaturized slim product, you know, and then there was like storage concerns too there. But this, it almost feels like that, you know, I mean, they did charge more for an iPhone 11 Pro than an iPhone 11 that was bigger. Is that right?
Because the Pro was 5.8 inches before this year.
Yeah.
Right. So the 11 Pro, which is what I have, is 5.8, and they sold the iPhone 11, which is 6.1, but obviously it was LCD.
Yeah. And the current iPad Mini costs more than the base model iPad, which is, you know, the difference is $329 and $399. So there is precedent for like charging more for a smaller screen because you've got other things that are different about it. There isn't something that's big, you know, better about the Mini than any other phone aside from screen size, you know, if that's your preference. So, but I could see them like charging more for the Mini because if they made other choices with it. And so that's to say that it doesn't feel like it's a budget phone because of its size, and it's only Mini relative to the other phone screens. So if you just use it, it's just iPhone, you know. I keep calling it in my head, like, you know, I think of it as an iPhone 12. So.
And it's definitely an upgrade path for everybody. There's still a lot of, you know, Touch ID phones out in the wild, and they're all 4.7 inches, might be, or 5.5. So, you know, it's a definite upgrade path for them, and you're sacrificing nothing at all.
Yeah, and doesn't feel like a toy to me at all. So, it's good stuff.
All right, let's take our first ad break, and then we'll talk about the iPad Mini.
All right.
Happy Hour this week is sponsored by A-Logic. Happy Hour and 95 Mac are teaming up with A-Logic to give away Apple's latest 12.9-inch iPad Pro to one lucky listener or reader. You can also get a special 30% off the company's new rapid USB-C wall chargers on Amazon for a limited time. These chargers use the latest in gallium nitride technology, so A-Logic is bringing a new, compact and portable line of rapid USB-C wall chargers, including an incredibly small charger with 100 watts of power output. A-Logic chargers are a great alternative to Apple's own chargers, offering up to 100 watts power delivery in the smallest possible package. Thanks to GaN technology, the chargers are about 50% smaller than traditional chargers, including those that you'd expect from Apple. And yet at 100 watts, that is maxing out what is possible over the USB-C power delivery standard. So you can charge any of your MacBooks or your iPads at full speed. A-Logic's range of chargers are available in four models, between 1 to 4 ports and up to 100 watt power delivery speeds. And you even get a 2-meter braided cage charging cable included as well. So just head over to the link in the show notes and get 30% off A-Logic chargers now on Amazon. And don't forget to enter the giveaway for a chance to win an iPad Pro. Thanks to A-Logic for sponsoring the show.
Oh, that sounds sweet. Awesome. All right, iPad Mini stuff. I've been thinking about iPad Mini because it started from the iPhone 12 Mini. It's like, well, if I like the smaller screen, I wonder if I would enjoy a smaller screen iPad as well. Like, really, really portable. And, you know, there have been different rumors in the past of, like, it's going to be bigger than before, but it's also going to be a full screen design like the iPhone or the iPad Air and Pro. And then this week there's a new data point, at least, that suggests no. what is this?
Yeah, so there was obviously there's been all these rumors about, from like Minchi Kuo saying the iPad Mini was going to go to 8.9 inches, and then there was one in January, I think, from Macattacker, which said it was going to be 8.4 inches. And although we haven't seen like people saying of the industrial designs of these things, everyone was assuming they were going to do like the iPad Air change, where, you know, you slim the bezels down and you make the screen bigger and the overall chassis that's similar, right? But the what's happened this week is leaker Sonny Dixon, who has a pretty good track record of posting like dummy units that come out of China. So these are like early fake mock-up models that accessory manufacturers use to make cases and stuff. And they can, while the actual product isn't available, they can make the cases against these little dummy things. He has a pretty good track record of posting accurate versions of these. And he posted dummy unit photos of the, quote, 2021 iPad lineup for the iPad Pro and the iPad Mini. And if he didn't tell you they were the 2021 dummies, you'd be hard-pressed to notice a difference because they basically look identical. So all the cool rumors of, you know, the iPad Pro-style iPad Mini with a bigger screen, they don't seem to play out based on these dummy schematics because it literally looks exactly the same. It's got the big forehead and chin bezels. It's still got the Touch ID button. And then the iPad Pro, again, looks identical, but obviously you weren't expecting a design change on that model. You know, the updates to that are what, like mini LED display, Thunderbolt port, processor upgrades. None of those things you're going to be able to portray in, you know, the plastic dummies, right? But the iPad Mini, everyone was kind of thinking, oh, it's going to get a nice little design update, design refresh, modernization, like similar to what the iPad Air had last year. But based on this image, at least, it doesn't seem like it's going to happen.
Yeah, so if that's the case, I'll just keep on not buying iPads. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's not really that appealing anymore, if in that case.
Yeah, like, the iPad Mini design hasn't changed since the first model. So since the first iPad Mini came out in 2012, it's always looked the same. They've updated the processor. They added a Retina display. You know, they went from a non-Touch ID button to a Touch ID button. So technically, you can tell them apart if you really look closely. But there hasn't actually been a design change to the product. And it's kind of sat around, like, I wouldn't say languishing, but it clearly doesn't get Apple's focus, right? Like, it feels that enough years have passed now that it should really either get a design change this year or the pricing to come like way down. Because right now the iPad Mini is sold at $399 compared to like the 9.7-inch iPad, which is $329. I don't think you can really get away with selling the same iPad Mini, you know, maybe with just like a processor bump for another year at that $399 price point. Like, you get more storage in the base model iPad, but like the actual physical product just doesn't hold up as much. Like the 329 iPad is a 10.5-inch screen, and it's really good value for the money. And yeah, it does have the bezel and stuff, but it's only 329. And then as soon as you hit like the 400 price point with the iPad Mini, it's like, really? Like, that feels like something that's prime for a design overhaul.
It would, I mean, make it boxy like the current iPads are, and it's smaller, and that would be very neat. But you know, if not, then I'm not necessarily interested in that at all. Also new this week is something pretty exciting. This came out near the end of last week, the big update to Apple Arcade. I call it Apple Arcade Plus because it's adding Plus to a bunch of stuff that was already in the App Store for games. But this is Apple taking a bunch of classic games that are popular and recognizable and also, you know, playable over time, and not just you finish them in one sitting and you're done, and adding them to Arcade, which is and then adding more categories to Arcade, and that now they're kind of categorized by how you know you approach the game, how you play. Seems like a good strategy. Good shift for Apple Arcade. In practice, I haven't actually like gone and downloaded any games. You know, I think none of the games, even though the games are popular, like I didn't play them as like standalone apps either. So, but I did like recommend to friends, you know, who I know that do play games, like, hey, Arcade got a bunch of games that you might already know about, and if you're in this bundle, then you get it, you know, kind of thing. Which is a different way of selling Arcade than if he's like, hey, there's this $10 or $5 a month service that you can get. You should get that service. I was like, no, if you get this bundle for these other things, then you can also get this then there too. That's my sell on it.
Yeah, like, it's obviously a bit of a strategy change for them, because when they launched Arcade, they were going for like the, you know, it's all new and original. We're going to be working with the developers. We're going to be funding the projects up front. We're going to be able to do things that have never existed on the App Store before because we're changing up the economics of it, right? And I don't know if you'd say like Arcade was like a complete failure, but it didn't like catch the world on fire, right? Like, and Apple's never going to tell me how many millions of people were using Arcade or not, but I think you didn't need to like be a genius to realize that it was small, right? Like, and it's a service, it's growing, it's fledgling, but I think Apple expected the uptake, at least how they presented it in March, to be more be more than what it has been, right? And so here's a bit of a switch up where they're adding, you know, some classic titles that aren't, you know, new to arcade, and they've kind of split it up into three categories. So you've got what they call now, you know, Apple Arcade Originals, which is like the old strategy of, you know, the new slash exclusive games, and then you've got Timeless Classics, which are basically games like, they're like board games like chess or Sudoku or checkers, right? Like just nice implementations of those games on a mobile device, which arcade never had before. And then they've got App Store Greats, which is like Monument Valley or Cut the Rope, you know, those kind of titles, Mini Metro, Threes, Fruit Ninja Classic. So games that have been on the App Store for a while, maybe they have, you know, dropped off from their sales curve because they're not brand new games anymore, right? But you know, they evoke the nostalgia, and they're still fun games. Like you can play Threes over and over again, and like say younger kids or people coming to the iPhone for the first time, they might not have never played any of these App Store greats when they were first released because they weren't around when they were, and putting them in arcade, it shines, you know, that curation shines and features those titles, and people who adopt them pick them up. Maybe people that played them back in 2015 or whatever and stopped playing in 2016, now they get a chance to play them again. So it's definitely a value add for the service. And it like helps make arcade a better proposition overall. Like mm-hmm. it goes from, because if you're doing the $4.99 thing with only originals, you know, you kind of have the TV Plus problem of like, one of these franchises has got to pop off, right? And they can't just trade on, oh, everyone already knows what this game is and now you can just get it here. But unlike TV Plus, you didn't get the impression that the games that Apple were funding have like that prestige quality to them. Like they're not, there's nothing wrong with them, but they're not like, you know, they're never going to compare with like console level games. So yeah. By blending in the kind of timeless classics and, you know, the best of the App Store, essentially, you're making it more of just like a straight up, you know, game subscription service, not trying to be like a, you know, an independent publisher.
Yeah.
And it just makes the proposition a lot more of an easier sell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know this about me. I play the New York Times crossword on my iPhone, mm-hmm. especially on my iPhone. I play the Daily Mini, which looks great on the iPhone 12 mini. And then on my computer, I play the larger puzzles. But just the Daily Mini, and they're really fast. You can do them in like 2 to 3 minutes, and just, you know, once per day, they're free, and keeps my brain going. And I was just looking at Arcade, and they do have a crossword game, so I'll have to try that out and see if it's, you know, just scratches the same itch for me. There's also a game that I hadn't seen before, because I really haven't looked too closely at these lately. One of the original games I liked a lot is What the Golf. Have you played that before?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I like What the Golf a lot. It's clever. But this game I hadn't seen before, but it's in like the most popular list, is Song Pop Party, where you guess a song as a game. That's kind of up my alley. So I'm going to try that out and see what it's like. But of the classic games, I think it's a great fresh strategy, but it probably doesn't appeal to me as much. But like, in terms of recommendations, it's better.
Like, I know everyone's immediately like, oh, this doesn't compare to Xbox or PlayStation. Like, it's kind of, that was kind of the original strategy of what they were going for, right? It was like almost like a Nintendo Switch alternative. By expanding this into like nice games that people like, you're kind of funneling more into where I think Arcade shines, which is just games that you can let like your whole family play, including, you know, younger kids or whatever. And you don't have to worry about the general crapware of the App Store of like ads or in-app purchases or freemium sales, right? The whole point of Arcade is it's $5 a month or it's included in your bundle. And all of these games, you can just play the entire games with no in-app purchases, no upsells, no advertising, no tracking. Like all of the App Store greats, they don't have new content really, but they're just remade so that they don't have any of the third-party SDKs in them. So like some of these games you could log in with Facebook before, that's been stripped out in favor of like Game Center instead. And any of the games that used to have like in-app purchases, they're just all gone. They're just included by default, right? So it's like, if they keep, and this came in one big drop, right? They didn't add like three. They added 30 games all in one go. So it, you know, rejuvenated the interest in the service for sure. Like, I think there was probably a bit more hype response to the press release than probably was warranted, because it's like, everyone's like, wow, this is like completely changing the face of Arcade. And it's like, well, you know, really, it's like, it had 150 games before, and now it's got 180. Like, it's not like a massive like sea change, but it's just a continuing improvement. And if over time they add, you know, more App Store classics and new games and stuff, and they're still doing originals, right? Like they added about 13, a dozen originals as part of this, you know, drop of 30 titles. So, like, they're definitely getting up there. And it's just a perfect thing that you can give, like, if you're a family and you have a kid and they're growing up on an iPad, because so many kids do these days, like, here's just one place you can go, look, play and enjoy these games. And most of them are pretty high quality. Like, I think there's nothing wrong with Arcade. It's just a slow burner.
Yeah.
And it's never going to appeal. Like, people that compare it to, like, the Xbox games or the PlayStation games, you're not really in the market, right? Like, unless Apple starts committing, you know, hundreds of million dollars to, like, AAA titles, you know, more, which is more like the TV Plus strategy, right? Whereas Arcade is like, we're going to give you, you know, $5 million or $10 million. Come on, indie developers, come make these cool games for our platform, right? That's what can appease, you know, a child or, you know, even family when you're commuting or whatever for days on end. But you're never going to really get to that console level, like that serious console level.
Yeah. I'm looking at the other game that I mentioned, the crossword game. It's called Tiny Crossword Plus. And so I looked at the App Store to see what is Tiny Crossword, you know, because plus means there's a version of this in the App Store. It is an Arcade, so it doesn't have, it might have ads and it purchases. And the version on the App Store is called Tiny Crossword Period. I've never seen a period at the end of an app name, but that's what they're going with there. And it just says Git and it doesn't say in-app purchases under it, which means they shouldn't charge you for anything in the game. But they do, in the screenshots, have like a token system, and then messages, which are probably, you know, play a little bit each day to get more tokens kind of thing. And then in the Arcade version, I don't see that dynamic. It's just endless crossword puzzles. So
that probably is ads. That's probably what the Tiny Crossword, the non Arcade version is.
Yeah, that's true.
Monetization through advertising.
Yeah, that's true. That would be it. So cool. That's a, you know, if that alone is is beneficial for me, then that makes the Arcade being in the Apple One Premier bundle even better.
And obviously, they aren't trying to directly compete with, you know, PlayStation or Xbox consoles. But every time they add a nice little game in there, and they've got some like serious titles in there, they've got like an NBA game, they've got Fantasia and stuff, that all just helps, you know, their platforms improve as games consoles overall. Like, you, similar to the Switch kind of, right? You don't have to be competing at the highest level to offer good entertainment. And this kind of feeds into the Apple TV, right? Which is, you know, the closest thing Apple has today to a console. And if you are getting into the continuous, you know, monthly family of an Apple One of an Apple One subscription, it's like, well, if you're bored, you can go and play a game on Apple TV for half an hour, right? And just give you some entertainment that isn't trying to trick you into buying upgrades or, you know, shoving ads in your face and stuff.
And some of the classics, with Arcade, they have to be made for Apple TV as well. So that the iPhone, iPad, Mac, Apple TV, and with these kind of modified versions of the classics, those are not Apple TV required, right?
Yeah, so there are a couple of them that are the classics that do have Apple TV versions, but that's because they already had Apple TV versions when Apple just obviously got them into the, just to offer them in Arcade, like the original builds of them worked on Apple TV as well. But most of the classics or the greats, they're just on the platforms that they support before. So basically that means iPhone and iPad.
Yeah. Yeah.
But all the originals still require Apple TV and Mac.
Yeah, in the last couple of weeks, Final Fantasy VIII came to iOS, and it's, you know, it's one of those games. If it was in Arcade, I might revisit it because it's one of the first games I played on PlayStation 2. It was like Tony Hawk Pro Skater and Pro Skater 2, Final Fantasy VIII, and then probably like 9 and 7, maybe 10 in that, you know, and this is all like elementary school for me. The game on the iPhone is $20.99, so that isn't enough nostalgia for me to want to buy it that way and play through my phone. But that's the first game that's like, if that was an Arcade, that would really draw back to me as a kid. I might spend some time on it, but it's not an Arcade.
Well, if you like Final Fantasy, Fantasian is made by the same studio that made the Final Fantasy series, and
yeah,
that's like one of the flagship. Right? That's like one of the flagship Apple Arcade releases of this bunch.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if I'm curious enough to try that.
Yeah, like, it might not appeal to you, but that's the kind of, like, you know, it's in the vicinity of, quote, you know, proper established games, if you see what I mean.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And this kind of feeds into a nice little find from our colleague Felipe Esposito, because in the tvOS 14.5 beta, 4 million, whatever we're on, there are references that the upcoming Apple TV hardware will be able to support 120 hertz refresh rate. Right now, there's basically no video content that's 120 hertz apart from, you know, what you take with your iPhone. But obviously games like 120 hertz refresh rates, and Apple can, you know, if they want to, they can collaborate with some of the arcade titles to get 120 hertz versions ready to then, you know, roll out with new hardware when it's available. The bottleneck here, though, 120 hertz is the TV. Like, Apple, you can, let's say you make your content through the iPhone with this 120 hertz slow-mo mode, then you have the new Apple TV that supports 120 hertz output. But the bottleneck is the television set. Like, very few TVs exist today that will have a display refresh rate of 120.
Really?
It just doesn't really exist. I think so. Like, you go and buy nice OLED TVs, like your LG OLED, right? It's not going to be 120.
It used to be popular, though, like 10 years ago, I think. Maybe that was just LCD, and I don't know if plasma ever had those. But I feel like refresh rate, I feel like we've seen 120. Like, I was familiar with refresh rate from TVs before I was the iPad. And I don't know about 240, but I know that, you know, because like my first job in high school was selling TVs at Sears. And so that's when I learned about like resolution and refresh rate. I feel like 120 was one of the upsells 10 years ago.
Maybe that was like the plasma era.
Yeah, it was when plasmas were around, but maybe it didn't come over to OLED in the same way, because isn't OLED the bottleneck for refresh rate on iPad before?
Yeah, true.
Yeah, so maybe it's like an LCD, like an LED backlit or LCD backlit LED thing, but doesn't make it to OLED. And so I haven't kept up with TVs in this decade.
I think 120 4K TVs are like available, but they're quite rare at the moment, because I think they went out of fashion and now they're starting to come back into fashion.
Okay.
Because like the Xbox Series X and the PlayStation 5, they support like 120 hertz output.
Mm-hmm.
So slowly, like top end expensive, you know, OLED TVs do support it, and it's slowly coming down the line, but it's going to be like, you know, a couple of years or whatever.
Yeah, and the TVs
you see on the shelves are still, for the now, you know, they're 4K, but they're 60.
I gotcha. And this, maybe they got the 1080p 120 hertz refresh rate, and then the mixture of 4K and OLED is what made it fall out of fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. I can see that.
I can see why Apple wants to get it in there for the Apple TV, because A, they probably can share a lot of code from iOS, because they already have to support 120 for iPad OS, right? And we believe the iPhone 13 is going to have promotion this year, please, but that seems to be the case. And we have seen a trend where Apple TV hardware sticks around for a while.
Yeah, so you might as well go ahead and make it 8K.
Yeah, you might as well make it as good as possible this year if you're going to bring out a new revision, if you're going to then stick with it for another 5 years.
Unless you make one every couple of years, then it would be fine, but otherwise future-proof it.
And I'm sure the 120 thing also helps them do like the, because 120 divides evenly into like 24 and 48 and 60, which are like the common resolutions. So it's probably not too far out of their wheelhouse to be able to support it. Like, and if they can just have it there and be future proofed, because if they can sell this model for another 4 years, maybe by year three, so 2024, that's when, you know, 120 hertz TVs are pretty commonplace for buyers, if you see what I mean. So
yeah,
I can see where they're adding it. And I just don't expect it to be like the big selling point of a new Apple TV that's released this year, because very few people are going to be able to use it. Like, it's maybe a prestige point because they were the first to, you know, Atmos and Dolby Vision as well when they did the 2017 Apple TV.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, it, you know, like super HDR displays weren't particularly, you know, they were getting common, but they weren't, you know, everywhere. So maybe they're going to do it again just to continue pushing the boat out, because this will be like HDMI 2.1 or whatever, but it's not going to be, for most people, you're not going to see any change here anytime soon.
Yeah. You can still buy, this is not new, but you can still buy an Apple TV 4K for $179. Brand new. Crazy.
Yeah. Or you can still buy Apple TV HD for $149. Brand
new. Yeah. You could finance it for $29.83 for 6 months. By then,
please,
maybe
Apple,
be more rumors
Apple
of a new
TV.
One.
Just do it. Do
Apple
it
Apple Care for Apple TV should cover like a decade, because they're not going to update it in the media. It's only 2 years, but they should cover a decade, in my opinion.
Look, I know we've been saying this forever. This year is going to be the time for the Apple TV update, I believe.
I mean, it's bad when AirTags feel more imminent than an Apple TV.
Well, we can discuss that because, you know, that's in doubt. But first, Happy Hour is sponsored by BetterHelp. When you've accounted for the usual stresses of life, like waiting for an Apple event for 3 months in a row, you've got 2020 to deal with and all its glory, the pandemic. You know, it's been a stressful time. Do you feel strained or just not as happy as you do normally? Sometimes you just want to talk to someone that's trained about mental health and lifestyle. BetterHelp is quite literally here to help, and it lets you do just that from the comfort of your own home. It assesses your needs and matches you with a licensed professional therapist tailored to helping your personal well-being. Simply connect in a safe and crucially private online environment. After signing up, you can start communicating to a therapist in under 24 hours. This is not run-of-the-mill self-help. It's a professional counseling experience. You can access counselors specialized in all sorts of areas like stress, anger management, relationships, depression, getting good sleep, and so much more. You can start a conversation with your therapist at your convenience. Just send a message at any time. The therapist will respond in a timely basis, and you can also schedule weekly video chats or phone calls if you want something even more personal. BetterHelp is more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid options are available. And of course, everything that you talk about is 100% private and confidential. So start living a happier life today with BetterHelp. As a listener to this show, you can get 10% off your first month by visiting our sponsor at betterhelp.com/machappyhour. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, that's BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/machappyhour. The link's in the show notes. Thanks to BetterHelp for sponsoring the show.
Yeah, I love having BetterHelp sponsor. I will say, so my schedule today, I came from a guitar class to from there directly to my therapy hour to happy hour. So, it makes the world of difference to have, to be intentional about your mental health. So, it makes me so happy to have BetterHelp sponsor the podcast. So check them out. Let's talk about AirTags.
AirTags.
Or, you know, what's filling in the gap for now. Find My stuff this week.
Yeah, we haven't struck gold. We've just found some intermediate silver.
Yeah. I got to write the story this week about the expansion of Find My. You know, I think they announced it at WWDC last year that Find My would work with third-party accessories in the future. And then we saw in this beta version that of iOS 14.5 that there's the items tab, which, you know, you would think would be for your things that you put your AirTag on. But we also, you know, realistically speculated, well, that you know, this could very well just be used for what Apple already announced, which is, you know, Find My in products. And we knew that those Belkin Soundform Freedom earbuds would have Find My because we talked about how Apple could use that in court and say, look, Belkin, who makes stuff for us, made these with Find My. So we're not just, it's not just Apple, you know, it's not antitrust. This week, Apple announced when some of this Find My stuff will be available. I think that the items have appeared for everybody this week, not just 14.5 beta. And they specifically announced three accessories that you can buy that will work with Find My so far. So you've got an e-bike, which is a bicycle with it's an electric bicycle. So it's a powered bicycle. You have a tracker, which is like Tile, but it's not Tile. It's Chipola, which is not Chipotle. And then you've got the aforementioned Belkin Soundform Freedom earbuds that are $100. And I'm not sure that we would recommend them to anybody when you can get AirPods, you know, on sale. And just like, what do these do better than AirPods? And their AirPod knockoff.
Well, they support Find My.
But they support. So what they do is they tell us that future AirPods should support Find My. If they don't, then it's weird. But I was introduced to, you know, a new brand, Van Moof, I didn't know about. Our sister site, Electric, has covered Van Moof and reviewed the bikes that work with this. Last year, I did not know about Chipola. They make trackers now that you can buy, but not ones with Find My. They have a, I think it's called Spot version coming out in June that will work with Find My. So that's the closest thing to sort of AirTags, but I guess the difference in AirTags and what's on the market from these three products is ultra wideband. Yeah, so that's the what would make it cost more and be more useful,
Although, interestingly, part of today's part of the press release from this week was that Apple announced a draft specification, so manufacturers will be able to make third-party devices and items that actually can use the U1 chip. So when they announced Find My last year, it was just about Bluetooth tracking with the Find My network.
Yeah.
And one of Tile's complaints, well, one of Tile's complaints was that to support Find My, you're not allowed to support any other service. So that's why Chipotle has to make this spot tracker, not just adding it on as a feature of their current one, because part of the rules are you can only support the Apple service. Apple says it's for like privacy reasons or whatever. So Tile doesn't want to get involved in that, right? Because they can't offer support for Find My as well as their own network, right? And that's where they get most of their value. So that was one reason why Tile was mad. Another reason that Tile was mad last year is that Apple was keeping UWB to itself rather than laying out for everyone. Like right now, there's no developer API for UWB. You can get full access to the Bluetooth hardware, but the ultra wideband chip is Apple only. So the cool features like, you know, AirDrop or the music handoff thing, the UWB powered music handoff, they're only possible with Apple products because Apple
or BMW Apple. Car.
Right. Okay. So
with car key.
Technically, car key is like an Apple thing, right? But yeah, yes. Okay. So car key's separate. But just in terms of general like device interactions, Apple's keeping it to itself. Now they've announced that there is going to be some sort of specification coming at some point. Like they literally say a draft specification will be released later in the spring. So that probably means a real spec isn't going to be available until like the end of the year. So it's a slow process, but at least they've announced that they're going to support this in some fashion. It still won't make Tile happy, obviously, because it's going to have to comply to all the other Find My specs, and that doesn't work with Tile's business model. But from, you know, a more general user base, maybe there'll be some cool product that can come out of it supporting ultra wideband. Like, does this make you think that the AirTags are coming soon, coming not so soon, or cancelled altogether?
It makes me wonder if AirTags is ever like, so I would think it'd be hilarious if, because you can buy cases. So I'm like, three thoughts on now. You can buy cases for AirTags. People make those right now, even though AirTags haven't been announced and certainly haven't been released. And I don't think specs have been released for AirTags to like case makers, but people sell cases for AirTags right now based on leaks and rumors. It would be hilarious if AirTags were never actually intended to be a product, but were just like a, you know, Apple's way of trying this stuff out on their own before, like the test spec before issuing it to people that actually make these kind of accessories and other products. Because it is cool to have Find My work with your bike and not worry about if someone takes the AirTag off my bike, then it isn't trackable anymore. So mm-hmm. How do I secure it to my bike? It's integrated into the bike. That's pretty cool. The earbuds thing. Don't care about Velcro earbuds, but when it comes to Apple and Beats earbuds, then that's cool. But that isn't like third party. So, but the Chipotle tracker, like I didn't know about Chipotle. And if those are, you know, reliable, I don't know anything about them, but if they're just as good as Tile, you know, or they just work with Find My, then it's like, okay, that's pretty cool. You know,
yeah, like I looked up Chipotle because I hadn't really heard about them before either. But I looked them up after this press release and they get generally favorable reviews. The big reason why people pick Tile over Chipotle or whatever is because Tile's so much more bigger just in terms of the network effect, right? So you're more like if someone picks up your item that's got a Tile tracker on it, you're way more likely to be picked up by someone who recognizes what Tile is and they go and download the app or they already have the app installed and they can trace it back to the original owner.
Yeah.
Chipotle is obviously much, much smaller. Chipotle is obviously much smaller with the headspace.
Yes.
And it doesn't have the mind share. But that's the whole point of the Find My network, right? It can just be a beacon for the billion of iOS devices in the world. So the network effect problem, the chicken and egg situation, doesn't exist if you're talking about the Find My tracker.
Kind of makes Tile seem like antitrust. That it has to be the Tile network.
Like, I don't think AirTags are like a fiction of imagination, right? I mean, we had them on that Apple support video from like last March, literally had the second screen say AirTags in it, right? So something existed inside of Apple.
I was trolling.
Oh, okay. Like, I like to believe, because I think AirTags are going to be pretty cool, especially with the UWB stuff that I think for a third-party unit is still like years away from actually materializing. I like to believe AirTags are still a thing, but I feel like if they were coming out like this month, as some people previously thought, or we previously thought even, I don't think this press release would come out first. They might have done like them simultaneously, or Apple announces AirTags first and then the third party stuff comes out like the day later, or as part of a second, you know, well, separate press release.
Chipotle and Belkin, they're not even out until June.
Right, yeah, like you can pre-order them or whatever, but they're not really shipping. I think this means that AirTags aren't coming to the end of the year. Like, months away.
Because I have no skin in the game, I think it's safe to predict that AirTags never come. How about that?
Oh.
Because I don't really
Apple's
care.
Already discontinued two products this year. They're going to discontinue one they never even released? They could do. I mean, there's no obligation to ship it. It's not an AirPower situation because they never actually publicly announced it, right?
But yeah, we'll talk about in our next topic. You know, sometimes Apple just tries things and that doesn't become a product, you know?
That is true. Just one more thing quickly on this our favorite friends, the Belkin Soundform Freedom earbuds. Mm-hmm. So AirPods do appear in the Find My app at the moment, right? Because they appear under the Devices tab. And you can locate them sort of if they're in Bluetooth range with the case at the
play a sound, yeah.
And you can play a sound on them. So with the Find My versions, and we have to assume that next-gen AirPods will support Find My natively, right? Like properly, as the Belkin Soundform Freedom AirPods do. You'd hopefully get better location, and you get these pretty cool features. So you can get a notify when found, so you can get a notification on your iPhone when someone else finds the or goes even near the earbuds, right, and activates them. You can set a pairing lock on them, so if it gets lost, you can make the earbuds only pair to devices that are on your Apple ID. So it's essentially almost like activation lock, you know, on like the iPhone, but for accessories. So you can literally pair them only to accounts that are your own devices. So it kind of reduces the chance of them getting stolen and used elsewhere, because they're going to be duds, right? And obviously, you can then also leave a number and a message to be displayed for the person who does find them. So if an iPhone user goes and picks up your Soundform earbuds that you've misplaced, they can, you know, scan them in the Find My app and it will say, Benjamin lost them, please contact him on this number. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of advantages you get over what you get with the, you know, like basic Bluetooth integration for AirPods right now.
Cool. Just remember to unpair your Belkin Soundform Freedom earbuds before you sell them, you know, or else you're going to have to deal with support, you know, of having to fix that, remedy that.
So AirTags are still waiting to be found.
Mm-hmm. The other thing we're going to talk about this week is this podcast interview that Tim Cook did with Kara Swisher at the New York Times. And it's, you know, she's a great interviewer. The D conferences over the years with Kara and Walt Mossberg with Steve Jobs are, you know, that's reference material for Steve Jobs quotes and also for how to interview someone like Steve Jobs. And, you know, Walt Mossberg.
Yeah, the D conferences represent what, like a quarter of all Steve Jobs appearances?
Yes.
Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Total ever.
Yeah. They're phenomenal. You know, my intro to Apple was, you know, in 2005. Well, let's say 2008. Was like reviewing keynotes in recent years and then keeping track of them each year. And then also the All Things D conferences. So, you know, D7, D8, with whatever, however those numbers worked. But this is in that ballpark, but it's a podcast and it's Tim Cook and it's just Kara Swisher. And, you know, she asked some good questions and Tim actually gave answers to good questions. So it's worth discussing.
Yeah. Like obviously the core of the interview was on like the privacy stuff, and they talked a bit about App Store curation and App Store, you know, rules and the monopoly stuff and Parler.
That's what's in it for Tim Cook and Apple to give the interview in the first place.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, Kara's a great interviewer and whatever, but Tim had, you know, prepared answers that you've heard. You like those parts of the interview, you could guess what Tim was going to say almost word for word before he said it, right? Like, that's just how the situation is. Kara asks the questions, Tim says what he was going to say already, and that's it. Like, the cool parts of the interview where they went slightly, you know, more off-piste. At one point, Swisher asked about Elon Musk and, you know, about the car project stuff. And Tim basically was like, yeah, we're still working on a car. Without saying it directly, he was basically confirming that, yeah, we're still working on a car, but it's not ready anytime soon. we're going to combine software, hardware, and services all into one at some point eventually. So, you know, the Apple Car project lives on, but it doesn't sound like it's going to be ready. Like, his response was very much in line with, like, what he used to say about wearables before they had the Apple Watch in 2015. Like, if you do the Tim Cook D conference from 2012, he's like, the wrist is a really interesting area for us. And this time was basically the equivalent of that, but the car is really interesting. And so, if you know, the timeframes of like 2025 for Apple Car line up pretty well there. There was also a bit about Elon Musk as part of the car chatter, responding to a tweet that Musk did, I think at the beginning of the year, which is basically like, I try to sell Apple, try and sell Tesla to Apple, you know, 7 years ago for a tenth of its current value, and Tim Cook wouldn't even pick up the phone for me. And Kara basically like confronted him on that tweet, and Cook was like, I have great admiration for Tesla, but I've never actually spoken to Elon Musk, which is kind of crazy that he even admitted to that. Like, there, I mean, there's literally videos. Remember when there was that meeting with Trump and Tim was there? Elon Musk was at that same table. He was literally one person removed from where Cook sat. So I don't know if it's actually literally true that Tim has never spoken to Elon Musk. Maybe they've exchanged pleasantries and he's just never had like a proper conversation. But the fact that he even would say it at all was kind of like, you know, dang, you ain't pulling no punches in. Because like, in one part, the other part of the interview was like, I don't spend much time thinking about Facebook. And then like 10 minutes later, he's like, yeah, I've never even spoken to Elon Musk. Although he did say that he admires Tesla's lead in electric vehicles. So, you know, that's some compliment.
Yeah. Who do you think is the better CEO, Tim Cook or Elon Musk?
They both have their upsides and their downsides.
Who's a better innovator?
Well, I mean, you can't really deny on that one that Musk is probably going to take the biscuit there. Like,
okay. As always,
again, it's like the Steve Jobs situation, right? You know, one person doesn't make a company, but just
Whoever follows Elon Musk at Tesla and SpaceX and, you know, all the other things he does won't be Elon Musk, you know, in terms of, exactly.
Like, you don't have that founder quality. You don't have that, like, spark, right? Like, there's nothing wrong with Tim Cook's run of Apple, but
who's a better innovator, Steve Jobs or Elon Musk?
Ooh, I mean, I'd have to
Steve Jobs.
Yeah. Good old Jobsy, exactly.
Yeah.
Musk is fine. Like, I if you cut away the bravado and the stupid things Musk says, he's a pretty cool technical guy, you know? Like, and I think Jobs
if you cut off the, you know, the poor person skills of Steve Jobs,
Jobs wasn't a perfect person, you know? He had all the, you know, he disowned one of his children for years, right? Like, if you take away all of the, you know, personal life bad stuff about Steve Jobs, he's a great person too. I think the difference between Musk and Jobs is that, you know, Jobs wouldn't, like, make his bad stuff public as much. You know, like, Musk will say some really bad stuff just out in the open.
Well, Steve Jobs didn't have Twitter.
Yeah, Twitter didn't... Steve Jobs never was on Twitter. But if Twitter existed in the same capacity that it does today, you know Jobs wouldn't have put that stuff out there in that way.
Do I know that? I don't know that.
I don't think Jobs would have tweeted that stuff.
He would have tweeted about,
like, product stuff, but I don't think...
Jobs had some pretty fiery posts on Ping, so... Yeah.
Yeah, well, Musk is a different character to Jobs, right?
Yeah,
They are both in a different category to someone like Tim Cook.
Like, Jobs' quotes came through the press. It didn't come through, you know, direct channels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And then the other cool part of the interview that I thought kind of stood out was at the very end, Swisher asks about Tim Cook's, like, plans for the future. And she asks Cook, like, are you going to be at Apple in 10 years? And Cook says, 10 more years, probably not. But I can tell you that I feel great right now and the date is not in sight. But 10 more years is a long time. Probably not 10 more years. Like, that is actually kind of substantial response, I think. Because, look, 10 years is a long way out. And, you know, Tim Cook's 60, he'll be 70 in 10 years. I think it's very reasonable that he wouldn't be running the company that long. But... do you think he would have said that if he wasn't already thinking about retiring, like, soon-ish?
Right,
like,
right.
I think if he'd have, if succession wasn't, you know, in the rearview mirror, he would have said something like, I love working at Apple and I'm going to be keeping doing it for ages, right? But the fact he'd quite bluntly said, 10 more years, probably not, it's like, well, let's cut 5 years off of that time frame already. Tim Cook's going to retire within 5 years. Like, that's how I read that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Pretty substantial thing for him to say.
Yeah. You know, Tim Cook is 60 now. Steve Jobs was 56 when he died. So Tim Cook's 4 years older than Tim Cook, or Tim Cook is 4 years older than Steve Jobs. And Steve Jobs was, you know, it was his second run at Apple. But if he didn't get sick and you know, die too soon, you could say, you know, that was 2011, so that's 10 years ago, he'd be 66 now, or he'd be 65 now, you know, 66 later this year. No, he'd be 65 now. He was born in February. At 65, like, would Steve Jobs still be the CEO of Apple? You know, or would he?
100%.
Yeah, yeah. What about at 70?
I think Steve Jobs was going to be a lifer. Like, he founded the company. He loved it, right? He was working for a dollar salary. Like,
okay.
Until he became medically unfit, he would have kept working. And then, he even wanted to be chairman for, you know, much, much longer, and then sadly passed away within, you know, 3 months or whatever.
That's true. That's true. But I guess that's also to say that Tim Cook and Steve Jobs, they're not too different in age. I mean, they're 5 years difference in age. So Tim Cook is 5 years younger than Steve Jobs. But Tim Cook wasn't picked because he was the next person who could be the next, you know, essentially lifer CEO as well. He was picked because he was, you know, it was a decision from Steve Jobs. And he's had a good run so far, undeniable. And but you wouldn't say that Tim Cook is a lifer, though. You'd say that at some point before the carry question, would you have thought that Tim Cook would be a lifer or someone
he strikes me as a person that he's gonna, you know, do his course, he's gonna run the company well, and then he's gonna leave and retire, essentially.
Okay.
Like,
okay,
that's how I mean, that was always my impression. Like, and his pretty unequivocal comment here kind of just backed that up for me.
Okay. And then there was talk of a Steve Jobs succession plan because of his health, obviously. That was, you know, I think denied by the company for a while, and then, you know, was reaffirmed whenever it was necessary. There's not talk yet of a succession plan with Tim Cook, you know, but this brings it to the, you know, raises it to the level, to the surface of the topic. So, what do you think that looks like? Because over the years, it's changed. You know, would it be Jeff Williams or would it be Angela Ahrendts who left the company? Now John Ternus's name gets thrown into the mix. I can't help but wonder, is it only a white male who can run Apple? I don't think the answer to that is yes. I'm joking. It's not yes. But, you know.
I mean, the problem they have is that all the next people in their line are all white males. So
when Schiller left, they replaced him with an equally aged white male, you know. So,
but he was next in line before, right? Like, you know, I know you don't like Jobs very much, but he was VP when Phil Schiller was SVP in the same role. So natural succession, VP becomes SVP, you know. Like, that's Apple's problem with diversity, is that all their VPs are all white males as well. So you've probably got at least another two layers of them before they get through, you know, before they get through the ranks, unless they're gonna hire externally, right?
Yeah. Remember how like financially turbulent it was for Apple whenever there was the move from Steve Jobs to Tim Cook, even though that was a pretty conservative, steady change of hand. But I'm thinking, like, for the next person, I can't imagine it being that conservative and steady, unless just, you know, I can't imagine. I mean, even a John Ternus, like, which is kind of boring and not really, you know.
I'll give you my answer we do the last ad.
Okay, let's do that.
Happy Hour is sponsored this week by ExpressVPN. People, you know, you want to be private, and you used to be able to do that. The internet changed everything. Everything that you browse, search, video you watch, stuff that you stream, everything that you've tweeted and shared to social media, all of that data is crawled through, collected, and aggregated by third parties into a permanent public record. Having your private life exposed for all to see used to be reserved for those of celebrity status. But nowadays, the internet means that everyone online is a public figure to someone. To keep data private whilst you go online, use ExpressVPN. There are hundreds, literally hundreds of data brokers out there who only exist to buy and sell your data onto third parties. And when they do, they don't have to tell you or get your consent. One of these key data points is the IP address. IP addresses scanned to be used to as a unique identifier for yourself and also get an approximate location. But with ExpressVPN, your connection gets rerouted through an encrypted server, and that means your IP address is masked. Every time you turn ExpressVPN on, you get a random IP address that's shared by other ExpressVPN customers, and that makes it so much more difficult to identify you individually and then harvest your data and connect the dots to third parties. And it couldn't be simpler to use ExpressVPN. You just download the app and you press one button and boom, the VPN is active. You can use ExpressVPN across all of your devices. That's your laptop, your Mac, your phone, even your smart TV. One button and boom, you're protected. If you believe that your data should be your business and no one else's, secure yourself with the number one rated VPN on the market. Visit expressvpn.com/happyhour. That's expressvpn.com/happyhour to get 3 extra months free. One more time, go now to expressvpn.com/happyhour to learn more and sign up with 3 extra months for free.
All right.
So, succession immediately. Let's say Tim Cook had a serious medical issue, right, and he had to retire tomorrow. Obviously, the replacement is going to be Jeff Williams. Like, okay, he's Tim Cook of another brush, right?
Yeah.
He's obviously, I mean, we've seen him more and more in stage presentations. They've given him a lot of responsibility. Even, you know, even last year, he was said that he was getting involved more in product design itself, right? And
yeah, that's the immediate change of hand without a lot of prepping that doesn't spook investors and keeps everything on track.
Exactly.
And like Tim Cook was.
If you want a Tim Cook clone, you've got a pretty good one in Jeff Williams, right? Like, yeah. You're not getting too far apart. That's the boring answer. And so if Tim Cook's retiring tomorrow or maybe even retiring next year, I don't think they've really got anyone else prepped apart from Williams to take over. But if you're looking on like the 5-year timescale, I think you have more options. Like Sabir Khan, he's not very public at the moment. They could make him more public. He is, you know, Tim Cook's understudy in many ways. He's senior vice president of operations. If you wanted someone to take over from the same division, you know, Cook and Sabir Khan have worked together for a long time. Could be an option. The Bloomberg report from the end of last year floated John Ternus. I'd like to see that happen, right? Like, if you're just... Because basically, you're picking from the choices on apple.com/leadership, right? So if you want to expand on diversity wise, then you haven't got much choice apart from like Deidre O'Brien, who maybe I mean, she's been at Apple for 40 years, she knows the company pretty well,
she's a lifer,
if you wanted a CEO for life, O'Brien is definitely up there. But the Bloomberg report from Gurman last year floated John Ternus's name. I think John Ternus is cool. Like, I'd like to see John Ternus run the company. Like, if you want to go back to a product CEO, John Ternus is probably your best bet on what's on that page, right? Like, he designs stuff. He's hardware engineering. You know, he's not quite like the role of like a Steve Jobs or, you know, even like a Johnny Ive character, but he's probably pretty close out of the leadership page. Like, the sad reality of the leadership page is you have a lot of operations people on there. They took away... There's no one person on this page now, which is like SVP of design, right? Like, they got rid of that when they got rid of Johnny Ive. And they got rid of those designers who now I'm blanking on the names, but you know who I mean. The two people that they were going to promote.
Hayworth and Alan Dye, software design lead,
right? They were on this leadership page a couple of years ago, but then they got ripped off of it and they never got put back. But you know who is on this page? John Ternus. Like, he is young. That's a big point in his favor, right? Like, if you
he's
look
so
at everyone
young, I can't find his age.
Yeah, like if you look at everybody else in his leadership page, if you're doing like guess who, right? Short-term succession, okay, it's Jeff Williams. But Jeff Williams is like within a couple of years of Tim Cook's age. Like, if you want to solve the age problem, you're not going to solve it with Williams. Looking at this page, Ternus is the only one that's like, you know, in his 40s or whatever. Like, and he's, you know, come up through Apple, he's run iPhone, he's run iPad. He's like, he's been a key transition in the Apple Silicon changeover, right? Like, they've had him on stage more and more over the last 3 years. Like, I think he's an option, a pretty solid option for a longer term transition. Like, if Apple acquired a new CEO tomorrow or even, you know, next year, they've got Jeff Williams, right? But if you're thinking on the 5-year timescale, I think Tennis has got a shot.
Who's our successors on NFMEC Happy Hour? I'm not gonna live forever.
The Happy Hour podcast ends with us.
All right, iPhone 13. Well, who wrote this joke in the notes? He ain't staying for the contact lenses. Talking about Tim Cook and his 10-year.
I wrote that.
Okay,
just I was gonna say. I was thinking another 10 years. As he was like, 10 years is a long time. It's like, yeah. Your quote said you're doing contact lenses in 10 years.
I was gonna say if I wrote it, I forgot. That's good though.
Yeah.
Cool. Nice. All right. iPhone 13 leaks. Have those happened? What was it, like screen bezels or something?
Mm-hmm. So the Makatakara shared a dummy unit of the supposed i13 design. It basically backs up what we've been thinking about the smaller notch system. So if you just want to see like a pictographic representation of what this looks like, there's a new dummy that's circling around that you can see. There's a smaller notch because the earpiece has been pushed up into the top bezel, which means the width of the notch has gotten smaller. We spoke about this last week, I think, when the schematics of it dropped or leaked out. That it is smaller, but it's not like a revolutionary change. Like, it's probably 10% smaller on both sides.
Yeah.
So it's compacted down, and it's nice to see. But if a commoner garden person who doesn't care about this stuff to the level that we do, I bet they won't even like notice the difference. Like, Apple isn't going to sell the iPhone 13 on the back of the notch being smaller, right? Like, it's not a massive change. It's a small incremental improvement that's much welcomed, but you're not like jumping to a pinhole camera or anything, or a punch hole lens this year. Like, it's a incremental update to the notch's size.
They won't come up with a new marketing name for it.
Yeah, like it'll just be the new, you know, they probably won't even mention it. It'll just like just be part of the industrial design of the phone. And it's just like stopgap until they can do something more drastic, like a punch hole.
Like the notch's formal name is like the True Depth Camera System.
Yes,
and it just includes a lot of stuff in it. So
yeah, and based on the design change here, they're not going to call it like True Depth Camera System 2 because
right, yeah.
All they've done is move the earpiece upwards, which means the size can get slightly smaller because they have less things in them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and you're not seeing loads more content or anything. You're seeing literally slightly more wallpaper, right? In this example,
they're going to call it eyesight. Yeah.
It's a very small, minor change. Welcome, and every millimeter counts when you're down at this level, right? But I bet most people, when these phones come out, they won't even like notice the difference.
The iPhone 12 mini has a smaller notch.
It has a smaller everything, actually. Like,
right.
The bezels, all of the side bezels of the iPhone 12 mini are, I think, 0.8 millimeters smaller than the iPhone 12.
Yeah, it's really advanced. And then also this week, there's talk of a larger than 27-inch iMac whenever the iMac gets its design change. Cool. Okay. I wonder how big they go. This comes from Love the Dream, who said, "Don't say I said it," I think. So I don't know what to make of that. But
yeah, Love the Dream's on a bit of a weird tyrant recently. But
it's okay.
You've obviously heard a lot of rumors of a 24-inch iMac to replace the 21.5-inch one. And based on Love the Dream's tweet, obviously, that means that he's suggesting that the 27-inch one is also going to get upgraded to a bigger screen. He didn't specify what size, but, you know, the Apple Pro Display XDR is 32 inches. Maybe it matches that. I think maybe that's probably, like, slightly too big for, like, the, what, you know, IMAX is still going to be slightly consumer, right? So I'm thinking, you know, those rumors of the cheaper Apple external display.
Mm-hmm.
So let's imagine, and I'm just making this up, that external display is 30 inches. So it's splitting the difference, right? Then you'd have the new high-end iMac be 30 inches as well, and they can make the design of the two match exactly. So you could have the 30-inch iMac and the cheaper external display next to each other on the desk, and they'd be at like the perfectly same highs. So
What's the size of the XDR?
32.
Okay, I thought I was thinking 34, but okay, 32. I mean, LG does make an ultra-fine display that's 32 inches, and that's kind of where... you know, they used to make, so they have the LG Ultrafine 4K and 5K. The 4K is the iMac 21.5-inch screen. And then they made a 21.5-inch, you know, LG screen like that. Then they stopped making that one and they made a 24-inch, which probably fuels a lot of the iMac 24-inch speculation. I don't know that they make a size in between 27 and 32. So I wouldn't be shocked if it's 32. It's just not all the crazy stuff that is the XDR.
Mm-hmm.
And you even get the option for you even get the nanotexture option because you get that with the iMac, you know, today for $500 instead of $1,000. So that would be pretty cool if so. Because then you can experience, you know, everything that you experience on an XDR minus the reference monitor quality and price that you have. You know, when people talk about it's got way more screen real estate, that's appealing, not just because of how thick and crazy it has to be designed to stay cool, you know, but because bigger screen, more space. All right, cool. I'm not sure that it's too out there to be the new high-end thing.
I'm super hyped to see the new iMac design. But yeah. Again, wait, I don't think it's going to be like, I think it's going to be like June, like WWDC announcement.
What if this global chip shortage issue affects Apple's 2-year transition plan? Because that was probably like, you know, under promise, over deliver. But what if it's like, oh, now they have to actually, you know, it just comes down to the wire.
Yeah, sorry, guys, we've got a chip pandemic going on.
Right, yeah, because it is like, I don't know, Nikkei had a report out saying that it was gonna that was a bottleneck for like new Macs and iPads right now.
So I mean, it is a factor, and that's probably something they'll bring up at the investor call at the end of the month, because investors love that stuff, right? They're like, chip shortage. Yeah. So I'm sure there'll be a comment on that, and Apple will probably say like, we're going to see minor impacts, because, you know, Apple's the person that all these people go to first, right? Like, Apple has hands on all the supply, so like, so far Apple's been basically immune from this because they take all the supply and then everyone else is left scrambling to what we're going to do. The Nikkei report is basically saying, you know, even with Apple taking all of the able supply, it's still not enough now because the chip shortages are just so extreme. But
yeah,
iMac's low volume, I think it'll probably skate through. Like,
that's true.
The big issue for Apple is if the chip shortages affect the iPhone, right? And Nico said that supplies were tight, but so far production was continuing unscathed. So,
well, it already took out the HomePod and the iMac Pro. So, who's next?
I don't want to give Apple any more excuses for not releasing something new. We're craving something to be released. It's April. Come on.
Yeah. All right, Mayo, what is the problem with John Stewart?
Just a final little TV Plus news roundup. We obviously spoke about the John Stewart show a couple of episodes ago, right? Like, and you were complaining that it's not going to be a weekly show or a daily show. It's like occasionally. Or even on a schedule. So maybe that's the problem with John Stewart, is that it doesn't have a schedule. But what Apple basically announced this week was they confirmed a full release. So there will be the first episodes coming out later this year. And they told you the name of it, because before it was an untitled project. And the name is The Problem with John Stewart.
Yeah, it's a really clever name, because, you know, the show is to take one big issue for the whole hour and, you know, unpack it and you know, go at it from all angles. And he's also a comedian, even though it'll be serious stuff. And the problem with Jon Stewart, you know, it's a double whammy. It's like whenever Netflix had their comedy marketing campaign, and it's like, Netflix isn't funny or something like that. I don't know. I think The Problem with Jon Stewart is more clever, funnier than that as a title. I like it a lot as a name. I wouldn't have thought of it myself.
Yeah, it's a cool pun. And it's also quite brave, because obviously if the Jon Stewart show is bad, there's going to be so many articles, which is like, The Problem with the Jon Stewart show.
You know, some lazy editors are going to just do that anyway, because it's just waiting to be done.
Like a show that is about like Jon Stewart on current affairs is going to be controversial and divisive anyway, right? Because especially, I assume they're going to cover pretty political issues, right? So some people aren't going to like it. So they're opening themselves up for those headlines anyway. But that's part of the fun of it, isn't it? It's like the confidence to just embrace that as it is.
Yeah. And then there's the Line TV Plus podcast. What is this? I actually don't know.
Yeah. So Apple this week, they announced a new original series, which is called The Line. And that's coming. It's a 4-part docuseries coming later this year.
But it's not Call. It's The
but
Line.
It's not. Well, this is where it gets complicated, right? So.
Okay.
It's going to be a proper documentary series. So ignore the fact that I just mentioned it's a podcast, right? Literally, it's just a documentary series called The Line. It's about a former Navy SEAL who was photographed with a corpse in Iraq and got charged with war crimes, right? Okay. So this is coming to TV Plus later this year. But now, as in literally right now, Apple has released an Apple original podcast of the exact same subject matter.
Huh.
So you can listen to a 6-part podcast with episodes rolling out weekly, starting this week, right now on Apple Podcasts, called The Line. But it's effectively a companion to the TV Plus show, which is coming later in the year. So the branding is really confusing because Apple, this is Apple's official branding, they call it an Apple TV Plus original podcast.
Okay.
So it's a bit of a...
Before the TV Plus show is ready.
Before the TV Plus show is ready, exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
They did the For All Mankind podcast, right?
But yes.
That essentially came out alongside the actual For All Mankind show, and it's more of a companion podcast because it's like just talking about the subject of space and stuff, right?
Yeah.
This is literally like they're going to do a docuseries as a podcast, like a true crime series about the exact same things, and then in 6 months' time, they're going to do the same subject matter told in a visual format through TV Plus.
Okay. So I'm looking to see the production company that they did. It's Atwill Media is the production company who made the podcast for All Mankind.
I believe this one's from Jigsaw. So
yeah,
I think it is
saw that in the podcast.
So I think it is a different company.
Yeah, so that's kind of neat that they're not just having like their unofficial podcast studio, but they're jumping from different places based on maybe, you know, expertise, top topics and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I do think the strategy is a bit odd to release like them staggered. Like if you're going to do this thing, maybe it make more sense to have the podcast come out at the same time as the show.
Okay.
I mean, like,
yeah.
But I guess if they're doing, because there's loads of TV shows now which are like adaptations of podcasts and people will accept that. So I guess it's the same thing. It's just a bit strange because they're both being produced by Apple essentially. But.
Yeah, and as of right now, they have the 2-minute trailer and then they have episode 1 and 2, which are 41 minutes and 38 minutes respectively. So that's cool.
And like For Mankind podcast, you can access them in other podcast clients. So we're still kind of waiting for the day when Apple's like, we're going to do the Spotify move and make these, you know, truly exclusive to Apple podcasts. But right now, The Line is available as just a standard RSS feed if you want to use it in a different app.
Yeah, and because iOS 14.5 hasn't been released yet, we're still subscribing to podcasts, not following podcasts. Yeah. So, okay.
Cool. I don't like the follow name. I don't know why.
Well, you're going to like it whenever we talk
about
follow.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get used to it.
Yeah. Do you follow people on Twitter?
Yeah, like, I mean, that's different, though. That's a person. Like, I don't know. I would have called it like ad podcast, I don't know. Like,
okay. Get
I understand podcast. the connotation issue with subscribe, but like, follow. I'll get used to it, but like,
you will get used
I'm gonna
to
have
it.
To start saying follow happy hour and it just sounds weird.
Yeah. I want to give a special shout out this week to as we wrap up to our editor every week is Seth Krakowski, and he's the managing editor for Space Explored as well. It's the space site that I started last year or earlier this year. And no, it was last year. It's a year old at least. Because he edits this every week. So shout out to him this week. I think he's on Twitter at Seth Kirk, which is K-U-R-K, S-E-T-H-K-U-R-K. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Apollo Zach, which is A-P-O-L-L-O-Z-A-C. And if you want to follow someone who has 10,000 more followers, you can follow Mayo on Twitter at
BZA Mayo. And Seth Kirk is indeed fantastic.
What? Wow. How do you have 24,000 followers and I've got 14,000 followers?
Well,
what did
I'm
you do?
Clearly just 10,000 better than you are.
What are people doing? Like, Seth, can you edit out the part where I mentioned Mayo's Twitter handle? Like, he doesn't even say it in English. He says it in like old world English. Zed.
Zed. BZA Mayo. Yeah. That's what you need, Zach. You need a catchy jingle for it.
Yeah.
APOLOCAC.
I'm going to get Jonathan Mann, Song of Day Guy, to come up with a jingle. I'll pay him for one. I could do it myself. All right. That is the
Look,
Happy Hour podcast.
One more thing, Zach. Just remember.
Please do. Yes.
I was featured in Business Insider for my pithy tweets.
Yeah.
So.
Pithy tweets because you were like a top tech influencer.
I was a top tech influencer of 2017 or whatever it was. So
yeah.
That cool. Look, that explains the difference, mate. You just got to get to my level.
That's it. That's it. Your parents are proud of you, I'm sure. All right. That is the Happy Hour podcast for this week. If you have any feedback for this, you can email us at happyhour@9to5mac.com. And we will be back next week with a new episode. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Bye.
Bye-bye.